Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27.
Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Welcome to Orphans No More. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, Executive Director of Justice for Orphans Ministry. My guest today is Denver adoptive mom, Rebecca Volley. Rebecca is also the Executive Director of Family to Family Support Network, a nonprofit organization that empowers healthcare professionals to serve the adoption community. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Your journey to Family Support Network really began with your family's domestic adoption experiences. You and your husband, Michael, have three adopted children. Would you share with us about your adoption experiences and what you learned?
Sure, I'd be glad to. We brought three kids home through adoption, through infant adoption, and had two very different hospital experiences. So with my oldest daughter, it was very positive, very empowering. With the staff, interactions were very encouraging. And with our son, our youngest at this point, it was the complete opposite, just very awkward. There were staff that we could tell were really uncomfortable. We had known his birth mom since she was very early in her pregnancy and had done the whole pregnancy together. I was her childbirth coach, et cetera. And we got to the hospital and it just felt totally different than our first placement. And coming out of education, I began to wonder, well, what kind of training do they have around this whole new concept of open adoption? Because we know that adoption's changed so much. And it was upon that investigation, I found that they didn't have any training about adoption. They were really being put in a position to care for patients that were considering adoption without an understanding of the process, about what it looks like, what these potential adoptive families are going through, et cetera. So that was really the beginnings of the family-to-family, actually the family-to-family adoption support program that I created at Parker Adventist Hospital starting in 2004. And I was there until 2014 before I left to hopefully share this model around the country.
Wow. So you discovered that really there is no national training for doctors, nurses, hospital staff on how to care for birth parents and adoptive parents. I know you had described it to me at one point as it's like a wedding and a funeral in the same room.
Exactly.
Hospital staff can be very awkward. So once your eyes were open to this, tell us about what happened next. You developed a program. You alluded to that a little bit. Tell us exactly mm-hmm. what that is.
Well, you know, it was very interesting, and that is how I explain it, a wedding and a funeral in the same room, because with the changes in adoption, we didn't have this dynamic before. I mean, it was not a positive dynamic either. That's probably a whole other radio show. But having potential adoptive families there at the hospital really shifts what that patient's going through. And so when we started looking at this concept and talking to families, I kind of joke, we did a lot of bad adoptions at first, but we really sat down with those that had gone through it and said, you know, what was the hospital time like for you? And what do you wish you would have known? What do you wish we would have done? And that would be for both, for the woman considering adoption, as well as the family that's welcoming this child into their family. And we learned from them, and then we crafted the program around what they were telling us. And it was amazing to me that there was not a training. In 2011, I had the opportunity to go to D.C., with the Congressional Coalition for Adoption. I received the Angel in Adoption Award from Congressman Mike Kaufman here in Colorado. And I really anticipated that I would go to D.C. and share our model and people would say, oh, we're already doing that. Or, oh, they're doing that in Florida. Oh, and everyone was like, wait, they don't have training? Like, that's like the 11th hour. That's like the delivery time. Like, yeah. It is intense and emotional and difficult. And it's not malicious. The nurses are not trying to be malicious. They just don't know. It's really an unfair situation to put a nurse into the middle of without any understanding of this wedding and a funeral in the same room dynamic.
So you developed a four-part program. So tell us about that.
Well, it was interesting. We kind of joke it was the loaves and the fish. Like, we had this little tiny idea And God was like, oh no, there's more. Because we really thought we would be there just for the delivery time. And I often joke I was a wedding coordinator for adoptions. I did run the program at Parker Adventist for 10 years as the quote-unquote adoption liaison. And I was really just there to make sure that the patient was being heard, the potential adoptive family's needs were met, that the agency support people were also feeling connected, and that my staff was empowered to best care for this, these families. And that was really our small vision. And then it just expanded. And our four-part program now is that we're working with people considering adoption, preparing for adoption, the actual delivery time, and then post-adoption resources. And I often joke, I don't know a lot, but I know a lot of people who do. So I don't do all of those things, but we found that there was a gap, and there were multiple gaps, actually, in the community in those categories, not just during the delivery time, but, you know, where do you go if you, maybe you've gone through infertility and you want to create your family through adoption, or maybe you feel called to adopt and you don't know how to grow your family through adoption. So we started offering Maybe We'll Adopt classes, and that allowed families to come to a completely neutral space and just process this concept. And we talked about some pretty tough stuff. I often say we gotta deal with our stuff and know what we're coming in with. We know now what an impact that has on our children and on attachment, et cetera. And so we started doing that. We also started being a resource for women considering adoption and unplanned pregnancy. And that was a gap when they weren't ready to call an adoption agency. We are an agency state here in Colorado, so they would ultimately need to be working with an agency. But sometimes they just would get referred from a doctor's office or from Planned Parenthood or from a school or a church where they're facing unplanned pregnancy and they're not ready to make that call. But they would have somebody that they would call and be able to process through that concept and also get them established in prenatal care. Because a lot of times, being unplanned, it's coming out of nowhere, you know, they really do need added support. And so we started working on those, considering adoption and being a resource for them. We also started offering classes. We did adoptive baby care class. We did CPR classes. And people joke, like, oh, so if you adopt a child, you do CPR different? And I'm like, no. But you're in a room of people that are on the same journey. And that's just the fellowship and the support that comes from that is just invaluable. We also started offering private childbirth classes to women considering adoption because we found out, again, an identified gap when talking to the community. We said, well, are these women getting their childbirth education? And they were like, oh, they don't go. You know, one woman told me, I don't want to go where there's cute pillows and big rings. Like, I'm going through this. It's just too hard to step into that population. So we started doing private classes like that. I mentioned the hospital time. And that's unique in and of itself. We had the only hospital program in the nation that was hospital-based. And then the post-adoption support. And I'm sure on your show you talk a lot about just that idea of how much support's needed, that it's not bad, it's just different as far as bringing home kids home through adoption and the trauma they can face and how that impacts our parenting. And then beyond that, how do we continue to support the patient that's chosen adoption? So how can we be an added support to her in those dark days after she places that child? And I think that's an interesting gap, and it's one that we really don't discuss. There's a lot of conversations about post-placement grief on the internet, often from women that have not had support after a placement. And so how can we be, again, that resource, a phone number in her cell phone when she's going through that? It's been interesting even looking over the 10 years that right around, between 4 and 5 months after placement, we often hear from the moms that have chosen adoption back to the hospital. Maybe they've come for a doctor's appointment, and they would reach out to me. And that's really where we see that fog almost lifts for them. And they realize or really start struggling. And sometimes they'll go back to adoption professionals that have supported them. And often maybe that counselor's no longer at that agency, or maybe that counselor's super busy, or they have a hard time reaching out to them. And so it's really given an added support on the backside of adoption. And then, like I mentioned, as far as trauma parenting is concerned, you know, my kids are now teenagers, which I can't even believe. but I have a 14, 16, and 18-year-old. So this vision has really been percolating, and we've been striving for this for so long, getting close to 2 decades, actually. And just that idea of how do we come alongside families that are bringing home kids through adoption, making sure they have a really good community around them, because we're starting to talk about adoption so much more. You know, we think about kind of the shame and secrecy that used to happen in adoption, and, you know, children were matched to adoptive families so they didn't ever have to be told they were adopted and whatnot. And now we're saying, no, we need to talk about this stuff. And I think we've gone through this maybe a transformation in the last 5 years that I've witnessed as an adoptive parent myself, and then also with my ear to the ground nationally, that now not only are we talking about it, now we're talking about the hard stuff. And I think that's key, because I think we kind of used to tie a bow around it, maybe use the, well, you're chosen and, you know, God sent you to us and we're going to put a bow around that, but we're not going to talk about the loss of your first family. And that's, I think we're learning that's not okay. The adoptees of today are saying, no, I did lose. There's loss that saturates every adoption story. Mm-hmm. And I think we're finally learning we have to address that. And it's hard. It's hard stuff, but I think we can do it well if we can learn from one another and really be key to listening to one another.
Absolutely. And really, you're bringing attention to areas that most people don't think about it, because you either think about the adoptive family and now they have this baby and now they're going to live happily ever after. But nobody really thinks again about the birth mom.
Right.
And what
right.
she may be going through. And I know, you know, really before you and I had this conversation recently, you know, I would just assume that hospital staff is trained in this kind of thing and didn't realize that there could be kind of this awkwardness about the whole process if an adoptive family is present in the delivery room or, you know, is there with that interaction with the birth mom and the baby. So there's really a lot of education and a lot of awareness that needs to be brought all the way around.
Absolutely. And I think my heart breaks because, again, once we started kind of discussing this, my nursing staff was like, please tell me how to best handle this. And, you know, we often tell them it's similar to a bereavement program. If you have an infant loss in the hospital, there's a stillborn that happens, that we now know programming around that can help us do loss well. And so we're thinking people don't tend to see adoption as loss. And I was in that group, too. You know, I thought it was a win-win-win. We couldn't have biological children. She wasn't ready to be a mom, and so we'd just bring this child home and kumbaya, it would be fine. Like, you know, we'd go, it all would be right with the world. And we've glazed over that fact that absolutely it's not a win-win-win. It's beauty and brokenness, but if we don't acknowledge that and really help find healing for all of us, really the child is the one that's going to suffer if we never acknowledge the loss that they've gone through. And so I love that you said, not only do we have a blind spot to the grief that mom goes through, but that blind spot in healthcare education as a whole.
Yeah. Wow. Well, let me just remind our listeners that this is Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. To learn more about adoption, foster care, or global orphan care, visit our website, justicefororphansny.org. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, and joining me today from Denver, Colorado, is adoptive mom Rebecca Volley. She's also the executive director of Family to Family Support Network, a nonprofit organization that empowers healthcare professionals to serve the adoption community. Rebecca, from your adoption experiences, being in the hospital for the births of two of your children, correct, or all three of them?
Actually, our middle son came home a little bit older, so we didn't have a hospital experience with him. And our firstborn, we weren't there for the delivery, but our youngest, we were. And so it was just, you know, I have very different stories, but what was the gap was the inconsistency. And really what we found is that the healthcare workers that were comfortable usually had an adoption story. So if there was a nurse that really came in and embraced us, almost always they would say, well, you know, my sister has gone through adoption, or, you know, I went through this internationally or whatnot. So there was almost an understanding, but so unfortunate for those nurses that were put in that position without any information.
Wow. So you realize that hospital staff, doctors, nurses are really not educated on how to compassionately interact with both birth parents and adoptive parents during that transition. You're working towards national initiatives to change that. Tell us what you're doing.
Yes, I am. And this is, you know, we often say you find your calling when you find what keeps you up at night. And I joke that I really haven't slept in about 15 years because it's really heavy on my heart. It became, when we go back to that idea of bereavement, that, you know, I had a friend of mine that learned that there was programming that went around families that had gone through an infant loss. And she had gone through two herself with her husband. And all of a sudden she was crying. And I said, are you okay? And she's like, wow, we didn't get any of that. We didn't get that support. We didn't get those keepsakes. We weren't surrounded by that understanding. We were just kind of put at the end of the hall and left alone. You know, no one really say anything for fear of saying the wrong thing. And that's what ended up happening. I continued to work at Parker Adventist. I continued to learn more across the nation about it being a national problem, a national gap, a national blind spot. And I really just couldn't stay doing my dream job, which Parker Adventist Hospital, for supporting me for 10 years doing something that no other hospital in the nation was doing, should be so commended in the culture of healthcare right now. But when it came time to, limit myself to just that one location, it just broke my heart. I thought, it's not okay for someone in a city nearby to have a totally different adoption experience, to be put at the end of the hall and no one spoke to them because they didn't have a program that offered neutral, compassionate care. And so in end of 2014, I went ahead and quit my job. And I always said I wouldn't stay a day late or leave a day early, but left my salary, my benefits, the whole nine yards. People would think I was crazy. I kept joking, it doesn't fit in a spreadsheet. But we just knew we couldn't keep this to ourselves, that God had crafted this program, and it really needed to be in every hospital, that there needed to have, that we didn't want families sharing their story and say, gosh, if we would have been at this hospital, our entire story would have started differently, you know, for the adoptee, for the potential adoptive family, and for that patient. So we really did start looking at a national level, and that's what the Family to Family Support Network focuses on, is going into hospitals, training their staff in what we call neutral, compassionate care. And that's you have to be very intentional to be neutral about something as intense as adoption.
Oh, absolutely. So what do you want to see happen nationally regarding best practice in this area?
Oh, my fantasy world includes family-to-family support networks in all the hospitals, at least large hospitals and larger communities. I think that the internet world does help us to supplement that in smaller communities. But you'll notice that it used to be the Family-to-Family Adoption Support Program, and our nonprofit is actually the Family-to-Family Support Network. We've taken out the name adoption. And the reason we did that is we really found that with networking, often if we have good, solid parenting resources, that mom may not need to do adoption. And if that child can stay with that mom, she absolutely should. He should be with his biological family and be raised, you know, in his tribe, absolutely. So we stepped out, and the model really is about training the nurses in neutral, compassionate care around adoption, but then also connecting parenting resources in that community to that hub at the hospital. So if a woman is considering adoption, she can be empowered with the resources in the neighborhood to see if she even needs to do that. And what we found is that this also allows us to have a really clear view of what needs to be offered in any given neighborhood. You know, we often hear people talk about pro-life versus pro-birth, and okay, so she carried the baby to term, but now how can we help and support her? Mm-hmm. And so we've defined these pillars of parenting that we really hope to have in every community. What does the housing look like? What kind of daycare can be provided? What kind of transportation, job trainings, education? So we found these really seven different pillars that can really empower a mom or a couple to go ahead and parent their child. And so with ethical adoption resources offered and good pillars of parenting offered, then they can make a really educated decision for their child and for their life moving forward.
Wow. So, and we've talked about that on this show before, that really as believers, we, you know, we are not afraid to say that we're pro-life, but yet you don't hear a lot of believers saying that they're pro-adoption, or are they really willing to step in? Because when we can get a birth mom to choose life for her baby, what happens next? She's either going to need some support parenting, or she's going to need some support making an adoption plan.
Absolutely. And I think I've definitely not made friends. There's times that I've kind of pushed that envelope, because I think you are 100% right that there is a lot of talk about having her choose life and carry that pregnancy to term. Well, that's great. But when I come back around and need to help support this mother with her child, sometimes it's just flat out crickets. I can't find those resources for this mom, and watching them struggle is really difficult on the front lines. So I think this gives us a really set model, and hopefully it would give the community an opportunity to plug into the gap. so they could come to Family Support Network and say, we want to put a ministry into this community. Where do you see the gap? And we could say, you know where it is? It's in transportation. So can you help us with helping them find either a used car or bus token or whatever to help really support them in their parenting? So, and we stand really solid on our pro-education platform, because we really believe true choice comes with accessibility and education. If you don't have accessibility and education, really many of these moms don't have a choice.
So can you explain or share or list off what those seven pillars are that you focus on?
I certainly hope I can. Okay, so housing. It used to be four, and it was really pretty. It made a really cute pillar, but then I was like, I was working with moms going, oh gosh, I need to add that. So it's housing, employment, daycare, transportation, mental health resources, ongoing education, and family-like support systems. And this one we actually added when I was in Washington, D.C. I've been working with Senator Mary Landrieu, who is out of Louisiana, and she and I brainstormed a lot around these. And really, I also found out where I needed to step in and help the moms I'd been working with. So I had a young lady who her daughter didn't have a fever, but she didn't have, she hadn't had that 24 hours it was required for her daycare, and she had to go to work the next day. So she called me. That would be a time in traditional family structure that we would have called grandma and said, hey, can you come over and stay with her because I've got to go to work. And she doesn't have a fever now, but she doesn't meet the requirements to go to daycare. And this poor mom called me and was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to lose my job. Mm-hmm. And what we found is once that first pillar goes, the rest of them, it's like dominoes.
Wow.
And so having people that will come alongside and say, yes, I will be that person for you. And I will watch your kiddo when you go to the grocery store. And I will step in when she's sick so that you can go to work and not lose your job. I mean, those are all the family-like structures that we've really lost in our current society. So how can we support these moms with these babes at home so that these kiddos can stay with them? And obviously the last place we want these children to end up is in foster care, which right. I know that you, I'm sure, talk about at length.
Yes. So. Wow. So I love that, seven pillars. So as we wrap up today, Rebecca, what do you really want our listeners to take away from our conversation?
Well, I think awareness is the first thing. We often talk about, you know, you don't know that you don't know.
Right.
So being aware now that there is not mandatory adoption training in hospitals for labor delivery nurses, for OBs, for, across the board on support staff. And so really helping us make people aware of that, you can visit our website at familytofamilysupport.org, and that talks about how do we come into the hospital? How can your local hospital go ahead and host a training where we would come in and train the staff and then do a second phase of training where we go in and have the community members come into that hospital and learn about what we're doing so that these families can be served there. So I think it's twofold. Talk to one another. If you're an OB nurse, if you're a labor delivery nurse, go to your director and say, there's this training and we need it. We call it the Serving Unique Family Training because it also overlaps into caring for surrogates in the hospital where we often see infertility, et cetera, and that complexity. And so raise the awareness and then encourage hospitals to train their staff and stop putting nurses and doctors in this position to have to care for these families with no information.
Wow. I love that. I love all that you're doing.
Thank you.
Is there anything that's in your immediate calendar agenda? Are you heading to D.C. for anything else?
You know, it's interesting. That's, again, probably a whole other show, but we really are working. There is some language that's been put in the appropriations bill by Senator Blunt's office, which they have been so supportive, really trying to draw attention to Health and Human Services, using some dollars to say, how can we be upstream and helping families so kids downstream don't end up in care, in social services, et cetera. And so, gosh, even get a hold of me and I will help you to advocate at your local government level, state government level, and even national level to advocate for hospital training and supportive families way upstream so we can make sure kiddos stay with their parents.
Wow. So you are doing such important work. And I just thank you for all that you are doing to bring awareness to an area, like I said before, most people don't even think of. We just assume that healthcare professionals are trained for adoptions and that they know what they're doing. And clearly, there's a huge lack there.
Yes, sadly. Yeah. But we can make a difference. I think the number one response we get from hospitals is that we, quote unquote, don't see enough adoptions to really have an actual program. And I would counter that saying, if you see one adoption, that's enough.
That's right.
Because it's exponential. That child's story starts in your hospital walls. That woman making that decision, her journey, her life is forever changed. And that potential adoptive family taking that child home is really moving into the family in a different way than society knows. We really need to make sure we undergird that process. So,
that's right. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And to learn more about Rebecca's ministry, you can visit their website, familytofamilysupport.org. And I'd also like to remind you that Orphan Sunday is just 3 months away on November 13th. So please get it on your calendar for your church. Orphan Sunday is a day for the church to stand together with one voice for one purpose, to defend the cause of the fatherless, whether children are in an overseas orphanage, in our foster care system, families are adopting. It's the perfect time for your church, small group, Bible study, Sunday school, or even your youth group to start a conversation about foster care, adoption, orphans, families, sharing about God's heart. God is the one that calls us to defend the fatherless. So be a part of sharing God's heart about vulnerable children, along with thousands of churches across the United States in every denomination and in 82 nations around the world. So for details and access to free resources, you can visit orphansunday.org. Thank you again for joining us today. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. I'd love to hear from you, so contact me at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.